Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
So good to be here on a Tuesday, this 10th day of June, 2025. Hi, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. Steve Dunham is here as well. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
Man, everything good?
Things are good.
He's got that smile on his face. That means kids are out.
That's right. They're home with parents, which means we have a little bit of a reprieve.
Yeah.
And here at the district office, we can get caught up on some other projects. Other work.
Now, people maybe don't realize this, but a lot of administrators and the district, you guys work all summer.
That's true. We do. And a lot of the summer is spent getting caught up on other things, because during the school year, so many things pop up. When you have 35,000 children in the schools, so many things pop up that it pulls away from your other duties that are part of your job. And so summer is a great time to get caught up on that and to get a little breather. And it's more relaxed when the kids are home. There's always a level of stress thinking, man, what could go wrong? Or if something goes wrong, it just heightens that tension. And so...
So my dad was a teacher, and so he had summers, I would say summers off. He actually took a different job during the summer, but my mom was administrator, and so she had to work all summer.
That's correct.
And maybe the hours were cut back a little bit, and they got vacation in and stuff, but she worked in the summers, and so I got to see firsthand the difference between the two. And my dad actually worked a lot of construction during the summers.
It's the truth.
Some cashola during the summertime.
A lot of our educators, they do. Some have second jobs during the school year, and some have them definitely during the summer, because it is kind of expensive to live down here in Washington County. And
yes,
so to make ends meet, you have to make sure you have additional sources of income coming in.
Now, I wanted to talk about it, if you don't mind for a minute, about, this is kind of a tender area. I know you get a little bit, but there are kids, quite frankly, that the best part of their day is being at school.
Yeah.
The easiest part of their day, the most safe part of their day is being at school. And now it's summertime, and they don't have that. They go home, and they have to worry about, I think the popular phrase nowadays is food insecurity, but also safety at home. Sometimes the home environment isn't as safe as you might hope it would be. And so it's that time of year where, even though kids aren't in school, I know you as an administrator, someone that has 35,000 kids to worry about, this, you know, you worry about some of those that have to be home all summer.
There are some cases where, you do. And I think the hope is that by working with our at-risk people in the district, we can connect those families to outside resources so they have some of that support, whether it's the food bank, whether it's our own free meal program that's still popping up at locations throughout the communities. Some of those things that we can still provide support and service and help so that they're not completely on their own. If we've done our jobs, we've tried to connect. And sometimes that's really tough, because you highlight a key thing. The parents might be trying to work, yet they may not have the home of their own. They might be essentially homeless. There might be multiple families in a trailer. We have that situation. And so what are these kids doing during the day? It becomes a tough question that you can't always help with.
Are there, we'll talk about the food part in a minute, but are there programs for things for kids to do during the summer? Is there camps, things out there for them to do?
There are community camps from the district. They're much more limited. They're on a volunteer basis by our teachers, and we'll do a couple of science summer camps.
And by the way, volunteer a lot of times means free, right?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. It really does. But they're passionate about what they do, and so they'll use maybe a part of their curriculum that they really love, or a part of their curriculum that they weren't able to get to in the depth that they wanted to over the school year, and they'll share that during those camps for a week or two. But there are community camps as well. I know the city, St. George City, puts on several. One really great one is the police. St. George Police put on
Spear Academy.
Yeah. Man, I remember when they did that the first year, and they were so concerned because the kids weren't signing up. And so we put out an email, we filled it up, and it blew up. It was fantastic.
Nice.
The kids had a great time. The officers had a great time. And so they've really expanded the Spear Academy. And so if parents are looking for something for their children to do, that is one we would definitely encourage. And working with our St. George police officers, they're just the best, you know.
And by the way, SPEAR stands for, are you ready for this? Students, Police, Education, Achievement, and Resiliency. I had that. I memorized it.
No, that's awesome.
I lurked, actually. Just basically an opportunity. I think the police were really proud of it. I had Kyle Whitehead on, the chief of police, on, and he said it's an opportunity for kids to get to know the police in a... I mean, a lot of times, the only time the kids meet...
Is a negative interaction.
Yeah, there was maybe child abuse in the home or some kind of, some kind of argument and police get called in or, you know, there was theft or whatever it was. So to have them meet with the police and be around the police in a positive environment was really big. So.
And let's face it, when you see a person get taken down by a police dog, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
You know, and they got some great resources, things like that, where they're helping the kids see and experience. They know the kids are excited about it, and so they're showing them all these things.
I can't remember the officer, by the way, but he was telling me, he works with the police dogs. He says, I like being the guy in the suit that gets taken down by the dog. I'm like, you like that? Why would anybody like that? That sounds terrible to me. He goes, oh, I got padding on. It's fine. I said, don't you occasionally get, like, actual teeth? And oh, yeah, that happens. It's not a big deal.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Bleeding is a big deal to me.
But it's part of the training. And look how passionate he is to work with those dogs. Yeah. Because in the end, those dogs are a resource that help keep our community safe as well. And so it's all part of the training. That's fantastic. And I love how all of our officers down here are so involved in the community. They are really, really passionate about making this place better for all of us.
By the way, the Spear Academy, if you want to know more about it, it's for students entering 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. So not the older kids, not the younger kids, but the kids in the middle.
Yeah.
And if you want to know more, go to sgcityutah.gov. They have a whole page devoted to the Spear program, the Spear camps.
And if parents are looking for additional opportunities, I know there's some camps taking place at Thunder Junction, the city park. They do those week-long camps, and so I think they're on week 2 or 3 of them right now. There's opportunities again through St. George City there. I know some of the other cities have opportunities like this as well. Because we help share them out, and I've seen them from Ivan's. I've seen them from everywhere.
Yeah.
So
now let's talk about food for a minute, Steve. A lot of these kids don't get enough to eat. And I know if you're, say, a middle class, you know, like we are, well, I can't speak for you, but for me, a middle class guy and my kids, I'm used to, you know, I had the 3 squares for the kids, and in the summertime, they were taken care of, but it's not a given. There are some kids out there who don't have enough to eat.
That's true. And so what we've done is we've partnered with some of the federal resources, the federal dollars that have come in, and we're offering free lunch to any child 18 years of age or younger. No questions asked.
They don't need to provide paycheck stubs or anything like that?
No. No questions asked. You just need to show up at the lunch site, and that's running from now until June 26th. The lunch sites where you have on-site lunches are Legacy Elementary, Paradise Canyon, and Washington City Veterans Park. So Legacy Elementary and Paradise Canyon Elementary are 2 schools. Then the Washington City Veterans Park is where one of the ones that we bring it out to.
Mm-hmm.
Then grab and go sites where you can just grab a meal and clear out. That includes Bloomington Hills Elementary, Enterprise Elementary, Hurricane Community Center, and Leverkin Elementary. And now you don't have to live in those communities to get it. You can come from anywhere, and if you're close, hit that site. And those are being offered. Let me look up the times here. 11:45 to 12:15 at the grab and go sites, and 11:45 to 12:30 at the on-site lunches locations. So
pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's cool. Something we've done for years, that we try and set aside those federal dollars so we can do this for a month or so, and at least get you through the first part of the summer.
When you can put aside politics on, you know, whether you think the riots are justified, you can put aside politics of you know, the trans whatever, you know, shows. And none of that matters. All that matters is there is food for people who are hungry.
That's right. And you don't want a child to be hungry. That's the key. We really don't want them to be hungry. So that's where we are.
Do you know, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but say a kid went to get one and he said, you know, my mom's hungry. Is there any chance I can get two or my sister or anything like that? Or?
I don't know all the rules. I do know that parents cannot. It's not for parents. It's 18 or younger only, and we don't ask any questions. So they can even be preschool, is my understanding, and they can still grab a meal. We don't want any child to be hungry. We cannot do it for adults, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, and there are programs for adults who are hungry out there, for sure. I know the Utah Food Bank is big on making sure everybody has enough to eat. And I think every weekend I see at the mall, it seems like every Saturday I see at the mall people over there in line to get some free food. So.
And the first Thursday of every month is in the parking lot by the school district offices. And so that happened last week. But again, the first Thursday of every month at the Washington County School District offices is when the food bank has their pantry, your drive-through pantry.
Oh, that's cool. Like you said, the last thing I am still, Steve, you told me the numbers last year at how many kids in Washington County School District aren't getting enough food, and I was stunned. In fact, you told me a number that didn't have homes, that were basically living out of either under a bridge or out of a car or whatever, and that was shocking to me. I mean, we think St. George, Utah, you know, maybe a little bit bigger now, but still a lot of Mayberry left in St. George, Utah. You don't think about people being hungry.
You really don't. And we need to remember that it is kind of an expensive place to live. A lot of people want to be here. That drives up home prices.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we jokingly refer to it as the sun tax because, you know, it's really pretty. It's really nice. The weather's pretty good. But we do. We have about 700 children that qualify as homeless. Now, that doesn't mean they're living on the street, but... Yeah. Yeah, they are living in a tent or a trailer or multiple families in the same home, and it's just not secure home housing for them. And then we have upwards of 9,000 that qualify for free meals. And so out of 35,000, that's a big chunk.
Yeah. What is that, one-fourth? Something like that? Yeah. Pretty close to one-quarter of them. That's a big number. All right, let's shift focus for a second. I want to talk about your foundation. I know this is your baby, right?
Yes.
This is Steve Dunham's baby.
This is the fun part of my job.
Yeah.
And so we raise money throughout the year, and we allow teachers, we raise that money so that we can give it back to teachers. The goal is to provide educational opportunities for students in the classroom. And so maybe a teacher has gone to a training and they have a fun way of teaching a concept, an idea, one of the tools for the kids, but they don't have the money to make it happen. And so they can apply for a grant through the foundation. They apply in October. We award it in the spring. So we call it our spring mini grants.
So they apply for a grant. They actually fill out a paper and say, I want this and this is why. And it goes to you?
Yes.
And your committee?
They give us an educational purpose and the expected results. And they'll talk about how long the grant will last, things of that nature. And we work with local businesses to support this. And this year, I'm going to get choked up. We gave away $390,000 to teachers.
Wow.
We gave out grants to more than 600 teachers. I think it was 660 teachers, and that's about a third of our teachers that applied for grants and received grants. And so that's really exciting because that's a lot of times money that teachers would be spending out of their own pocket to make learning happen, to make learning fun and exciting, and that we can cover that. And teachers are still going to spend out of their pockets. Let's face reality. But, you know, if we can help out in these ways, we can make learning fun. We can improve achievement with students. Because when they are having fun, when they're learning, they retain that information. Everybody wins.
I remember, Steve, once I was at, I think it was Penny's or Sears or one of those stores where they sell shoes.
Uh-huh.
And I came across a lady I know who, and I'm not going to say her name because I think she'd be embarrassed by it, but... she went there and she had, I want to say, 8 to 10 boxes of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what are you doing? And she said, well, I have students who, she's a PE teacher,
mm-hmm.
said, I have students who go to PE class. They don't have sneakers to wear. They have to wear their regular street shoes to play basketball or soccer or whatever it is we're doing in our PE class. And so she said, I'm just buying some shoes for this, so these kids have something to wear. And I grew up in a house. My dad was a teacher. I know what it's like. I know the expense, the additional money they have to pay. But to have a foundation like this is huge for these teachers, because they will, like you said, they will spend their own money to try to make the experience better, to accomplish whatever goal it is they have in the classroom. They're going to get to that goal, however, whether they get money or not from the foundation or from the district or whatever. They're going to spend whatever it takes to get to that goal. It's important to them.
You know, it was an example, just like you shared, that caused our counselor closet in the foundation to become a reality. Mm-hmm. We had a counselor that every year was applying for a $500 grant simply for shoes for kids in his school. And we went and talked to him, and we said, explain, what's going on? He goes, regularly, I'll have kids come in, and he called them talking shoes. You know, the soles pulled apart from upper and
flappity flap.
Yes. And he goes, these kids need shoes, or they're wearing their dad's shoes or their mom's shoes, and they just don't fit right. And we said, listen, we can figure this out. And we sat down as a foundation board. We came up with the counselor closet, and our foundation board put up $10,000 initially to start that, and that was to help students in need. It doesn't matter whether they meet a financial criteria or not. It's a student having a crisis at that moment, whether it's they don't have the right shoes, whether it's they're hungry, whether they've had an accident at school and need a change of clothes. Students in need qualify for the counselor closet. Hmm. And we started with that $10,000. We promised the foundation board that we could make it self-sustaining. And again, the businesses in our community stepped up. And now we fund that, and that has grown to what we have our opening in our high schools, our teen centers, mm-hmm. because it's the same money. It's the same children we're helping in a lot of cases. And so it's completely self-sustaining through donations from businesses in our community, from individuals in our community. And we are able to provide shoes, hoodies, jackets, a change of clothes, emergency essentials, hygiene things, and snacks and food and weekend to-go bags for schools that don't have some of the other resources like Tan's Treats or something.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. So you were talking about the donations and the businesses. I think, and I'm glad you pointed it out, that this isn't money that the taxpayer is paying.
Nope.
This isn't money that mom and dad are adding to the kitty or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, this is money that's outside of all that.
Completely outside of it. And the benefit is because the school district covers the expenses of the foundation staff. 100% of the donation goes to where they want it to go. So when a donor calls and says, I want to give this much to a teacher, $500 to a teacher, all $500 goes to that teacher. When they call and say, I want to give it to the counselor closet, all of that money. We don't take out anything for operational costs. Zero. 100% of your donation goes to where you want it to go because of the district support of our operating expenses in the background.
There are so many charities out there that say, you know, the proceeds will go to this, that, or the other thing. Well, the proceeds, what that means is they're paying everybody first, and whatever's left, that'll go to whatever charity. And that's good to hear, too. It's not the proceeds. It's all of it is going
100% of it. And our foundation bylaws specifically state that we are for the benefit of the learning of the children in Washington County. So if it promotes the learning, and so like the counselor closet or the teen centers, we're removing barriers from learning right there. Yeah. If a child doesn't feel like his peers, he doesn't feel comfortable. If a child is hungry in class, he can't focus.
You're
it's a barrier.
About,
And so if we can remove those barriers, they can feel like their peers, and they can suddenly start learning. They can suddenly be successful, and they can suddenly find a way out.
Do you know if other districts around the state, around the country, have something like this?
Yes. Many districts do it. I wouldn't say we're innovators. We've learned from others. The teen centers especially, that's huge up in Davis County in northern Utah. Yeah. They've done it for years. And we've looked at that and then had the opportunity to apply for grants to build them. And we're building them in five schools, five high schools. The first one opened at Dixie High, and we are opening the other four this year. And so that's really exciting. And again, we will have a much more full food pantry stocked by the Utah Food Bank. And then we'll have support, a place where they can come in and shower, completely private.
I was going to say, if you'll explain what a teen center is in the 3 minutes before we go to break,
okay,
it'll kind of make people understand.
Teen centers are exciting because it's a place where a student who doesn't have the resources can come in and get everything they need. So if they're homeless, they get a private place where they can shower and do their laundry without other students knowing what's going on. It's completely confidential. And they will give them a change of clothes so they can get all their clothes washed at the same time. It's a place for them to study and get a quick meal while that's all taking place. And then they can clear out and head back to class. We, in a lot of the schools, we've tried to build that with a separate entrance where the kids can come and go and they don't have to walk through the halls with a backpack full of clothes or a bag full of clothes. So it's discreet. Mm-hmm. And we've really tried to do this so that, again, we're removing those barriers to education. It's going to be staffed a few extra hours in the morning and in the afternoon, with volunteers, because we don't have a budget for a whole lot. But those teen centers are a big deal, and it's going to make an impact on a lot of kids' lives. And we've started off by bringing all the students in and helping them see, hey, if you know somebody that could use something, either come get it for them or come in with them. So we're trying to normalize it with the students. It's not just for them. It's for everybody that needs a little helping hand.
And this is like a little portion of the school will be used for this?
The five schools, that's Dixie High, Desert Hills, Snow Canyon, Pineview, and Hurricane. Those are the five schools that will have them. They've donated a section of their building that we've remodeled. And those were the initial grants that we applied for from these foundations up north that helped fund the start of this.
Will there be, you mentioned volunteers, will there be people to say, I need my clothes washed, but I don't really know how to do that? Will there be someone to show them what to do?
Exactly. That's what the volunteer is there for, to guide them, to help them, and to make sure they have all the resources they need.
Where are these going to be staff members of the school, or are they going to be volunteers from home?
A little of both. We're okay. Trying to get funding to provide it so that it's what we call a paraeducator that's there in that facility so many days a week, and just to provide that extra help for the kids.
Well, if I know St. George and the Dixie Spirit down here in southern Utah, I have a feeling you'll have plenty of volunteers for that kind of thing.
You know, our community has really stepped up big mm-hmm. time. We've the donations have come in from, again, businesses and individuals. You know, I should give a shout out to the Assistance League of Southern Utah. They had some challenges with their national organization. They have disbanded and they have turned over all of their funds to our foundation so that we can continue to support these at-risk students in our schools. And that's a big deal for us. They saw that, hey, we can still make that difference and we can still help. And they've even committed to stay on staff or stay on and volunteer their time fundraising for that so they can continue some of the programs that are passionate to them.
You know, I thought it was interesting, just on a personal note. So as my wife and I get close to retirement, I'm still, people don't panic, I'm still got a few years away. There are people like, you're not retiring, are you? No, not yet. But my wife has her 30 years in with the state. She could retire at any time. And she's looking, at first we were looking, what can she have as a second career? What can she make money at? And then she started thinking, you know, we don't really need the money because I have a pension and we have our 401k and all that stuff. Maybe I should look at something, and I think this happens to a lot of people here in southern Utah. Maybe I should look at something where I can do, something I can do. Doesn't necessarily need to make money, but it's something where I can help people and make a difference. And this sounds like that kind of thing. Really, really perfect for it.
It really is. It really is. And kudos to your wife for thinking like that. I love that mentality.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I think there are a lot of people like that. She had a lady come and work with her. She worked in the courts for a long time. She had a lady that would come in once a week, a retired lady who didn't need the money. She came in and worked for free for 8 hours every Tuesday or something like that. I'm like, who does that? I mean, you know, doesn't she want money? She's like, no, she said, I don't need any money. I just want to come here and work and volunteer and help.
You said the right thing. It's the spirit of Dixie. And there is such a community here that pulls together to help their neighbors out. And we're grateful for it.
And we're lucky we're here.
We are.
All right, let's get a break in. We'll be back with more Steve Dunham from the Washington County School District after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. He's Steve Dunham. Thanks, Steve, for coming in today.
Appreciate Glad to be here, Andy. Thank you.
Glad you're here. Scenario. All right. Little Susie's in seventh grade, and middle of the day, she pulls her phone out and says, I want to call my mom. And then she knows she had a few texts, and so she goes to class, and she's got the phone sitting in her lap, and she's discreetly trying to text.
Discreetly.
Looking down at her belly, smiling, and while English class is going on. And tell me if that scenario is realistic anymore.
That is realistic right now, but it will not be realistic come the start of school in August.
Okay.
We have a new cell phone policy that is going into effect, and this is in compliance with state law.
State law. This is not a policy so much as a law at this point.
Well, we have to be in full compliance with the law. And so we've written this policy that essentially says kindergarten through ninth grade students, no cell phones or electronic devices bell to bell.
Bell to, and we're not talking about the class bells. We're talking about the beginning bell and the end bell at the end of the day.
Start of the day to the end of the day. No devices out. They will be confiscated. And the parents will have to come and pick those up. And so that's how this is going to work for kindergarten through ninth grade. Now, 10, 11, and 12 in our high schools, because they're open campuses, because the kids come and go, we felt like it was hard to implement a bell-to-bell policy.
Yeah, I can't see. Yeah, how would you do that, right?
Yeah, so essentially what we're saying is during instructional time, no headphones, no electronic devices, no phones.
What about the little white thing sticking out of the ear, ear pods or whatever they are?
Yep, that's not allowed.
Okay.
During instructional time. So in passing time between classes or at lunch, they're welcome to use their devices. But during instructional time, it's a no-no. And we're going to be strictly enforcing that because, again, this is part of state law now, and we have to be in compliance.
Okay, let's go back to the younger kids now.
Yeah.
Up to ninth grade, you said?
Yeah, kindergarten through ninth.
Bell to bell. Have you gotten pushback? Are there parents that are saying, look, this is not fair. This is not... I want my kid to have their phone with them at all times.
There's always some that will push back. Mm-hmm. But the fact is they don't need it. And there's things that we will do to accommodate if there is a specific need, mostly if there's a medical need. Mm-hmm. There are some kids that have their cell phones that help monitor their blood sugar or monitor some other things. And in those cases,
a hearing aid, for instance.
Yeah. It'll be written into their 504 plan and accommodations will be made. But those are very few. Likewise with the smartwatches.
I got one on right now.
The kids have those, and that's a key thing. They can text and chat, and those have to be completely silenced during bell-to-bell for kindergarten through ninth grade.
So can they still wear the smartwatch?
They can wear them, but it has to be silenced. Completely silenced.
Airplane mode or whatever.
Yeah. And so we're being very firm on this because it does become a distraction. Kids will be fine without it. You don't need to contact them in the middle of class. Whatever you have to tell your child is not more important than language arts or math or science, you know. And if there's an emergency, you can contact the school and we can get this child out of class and they can call you.
This is what I think is going to happen. Tell me if you think that this will be accurate. The first week or two, you're going to have a hard time. There's going to be a lot of phones confiscated until the parents and the kids get it through their head that you guys are serious about this. Is that kind of what you think is going to happen?
That probably will be. And there will be different pockets where it will be worse, for sure. You know, there are different neighborhoods where there's more pushback than others. Parents feel more entitled. And so, that'll be a challenge, and there will be some learning with this. But again, it's state law, and we have to be compliant to state law.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, whether you agree with the law or disagree with the law, it is the law. It's like, I believe stealing should be okay. Well, you know what, you might believe that, but the law says, no, it's not okay, and you can get in trouble, maybe even go to jail for something like that. So,
and any parent that feels like their child has to have their cell phone with them at all times to do this, I would encourage those parents to do one day where you take your child's phone away. You're going to see panic at the start, and suddenly they're going to get into a groove. But that panic shows the addiction cycle that happens with these electronic devices.
Yeah,
kids have become so accustomed, and I use the word addicted because that's what it seems like. They go through panic and withdrawals when their phones are taken away. And it's not healthy. This is not healthy at all. And so I really would encourage parents that feel like their child has to do that, try it for one day. Try it for one day to see how your child reacts. And if you see some of those behaviors, the panic, the stress, the anxiety because they don't have their phone, you're doing the right thing to take it away and to maybe do more days like that.
So, I was going to say it might be time for an intervention and a little bit of rethinking of your policy as a family if your kid is really that addicted to it.
It really does. Yeah. And even there's adults that can't put these down.
It's true.
It becomes a trick. So,
and, you know, I was reading an article about this yesterday, a very well-written article by the lady who's in charge of, I don't know, Utah families, whatever. Anyway, I forget. But basically her deal was, look, the number one thing we can do before policies and contracts and all the stuff that you want to do with your kids is set an example. If your kids see you looking at your phone every 10 seconds or, oh, this is a really important text, I got to answer this one. Or, you know, it's a work thing, even though it's 8 o'clock at night or whatever. If your kids see that, guess what? They're going to do the same thing or worse.
Yeah. You know, I actually got called out a few weeks back by my oldest son.
All right. Way to go, son.
I know.
What's his name?
Luke.
Way to go, Luke. Good job, buddy.
But he did. He goes, Dad, you know, during dinner, you pull out your phone a lot.
Ooh.
And I that was a wake-up call. I didn't think I did, or I thought I did it when other people were on their phones. And so I've tried to be more aware of that, especially when I have family time, and maybe put that away a bit more. But I do appreciate him saying something because it made me think, okay, if my oldest is highlighting that I'm not there 100%, I can donate more time to my kids. They deserve that, and I want that time with them. I don't want the time on my electronic device. I'd rather engage with my kiddos.
I think the awareness is the number one step, right? Because I, like you, I was like, oh, I'm not bad. I actually do pretty good. And then I noticed awareness in my own head after we had talked. I think you and I, it was last month we talked about it, and I looked at it and I went, okay, I'll think about this now. And I, sure enough, the next night, dinner time, someone else is on their phone. I'm like, I'll just, you know, check my messages, or I'll check my email, or I'll check my notifications from Facebook, which is really bad. And I was doing it. And I was like, you know, I don't need to do that. There is no reason I should be looking at Facebook while I'm sitting around the table with four or five other of my friends and family members. There's no reason.
No, and those are probably the most important times that we are 100% engaged with them.
Yeah.
You know, we have enough time during the day to check those notifications. They can wait. In fact, I've turned off notifications on my emails because it was such a distraction.
Good move.
And work was following me home a little too much.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it can wait till tomorrow.
Now, there are us guys, especially, who feel like we need to know the latest score of a ball game. You know, I'm a big Houston Astros fan, and I found myself the other day at dinner with people's, you know, friends of mine, loved ones, and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to check real quick. I want to see what the score is. And oh, it was tied, and it's the ninth inning, and there's a man on. I got to do the little update and watch this while it's going on. And before you know it, you know, 20 minutes later, having stared at my phone, everybody else is doing something else, and I missed that moment.
It is like a drug. I'll only do a little bit of cocaine, then all of a sudden you're addicted.
Yeah.
And you're drawn in deeper than you ever thought you'd be.
That's true. And hopefully, I say hope. I think it really is turning. I think for probably a decade now, we've realized that it's harming our children.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done anything about it until recently. But I think now, okay, we acknowledge, I think it's general common knowledge, 24/7 smartphone access to kids is bad.
It is, yeah.
But I think we're now starting to realize 24/7 smartphone access to adults is also bad.
You know, you see adults that are getting addicted to social media, where they're addicted to likes, and they have to, oh, I got to get a video out for this so I can get more likes. Come on.
Dopamine, yeah.
you're exactly right. And that's hard to see. It's really hard to see in kids, but to see adults, you're just like, oh, man, come on. I think you can do better, you know?
Yeah.
But then it becomes a living for them. Some people are making money off of that, and I don't want to fault that because I wouldn't know how to make money off of social media, you know? But
yeah, me neither. No. I will say this, and I was encouraged by this. So
maybe if there's an Only Fat Guys instead of an Only Fans.
OFG, Only Fat Guys.
Yeah. Only Fat Guys, yeah.
I was at my grandkids' house this past weekend. Maybe it was 2 weekends ago. Yeah, it was 2 weekends ago. And it was interesting to me, even though, so they had the big screen off in the corner. It was, you know, Bluey was playing all that stuff. But the kids had gotten to the point where they didn't even acknowledge that anymore. The kids wanted to sit on, they call me Pops, they wanted to sit on Pops' laps and read stories. They had gotten some Lego stuff for their birthday. They wanted to play Legos and they wanted to play with this, you know, Hot Wheels cars. And I was like, you know, I think at least when they're younger, they realize this is more, reading stories and playing with toys and stuff is actually more important, more fun than looking at some screen. I loved it.
I would say that is a huge win if your grandkids would much rather read a story or play Legos with you than to watch a show or to be dinking around on a phone. Yeah, yeah, that's a huge win. Good for you.
I think I read about 50 stories on Saturday, a week ago Saturday.
And you change your voice when the characters?
Sometimes, yeah. Although after about 30 or 40 of them, you're like kind of tired. Yeah, I'm just going to read this. And, you know.
That's
but
cool.
I did get to know the Hungry Caterpillar very well.
That's awesome.
And all the things he ate. And I don't think I could eat as much as that Hungry Caterpillar did.
Oh, it would be a struggle, yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. Be back with more with Steve right after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Andy Griffin and Steve Denham here.
We're back
on this Tuesday morning, 10th day of June.
Yeah. Look at that.
Summer just, so graduations were, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
End of May, right?
Yes.
And, I always wondered, so my wife was talking about this, and she's like, what a travesty for these kids who are in the baseball playoffs or softball or whatever, that they have to miss graduation sometimes because they play deep into the playoffs. And as a sports guy, I'm like, travesty? What are you kidding? They're loving it, the fact they don't have to go sit in a boring auditorium. Instead, they're playing baseball or softball or track or whatever it is and making it maybe all the way to the state, you know, semis or finals. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Do you have an opinion? Does the district have an opinion about that kind of thing? I mean, obviously it's condoned because you let it happen, but at the same time, do you think there are parents or maybe even kids who feel like they missed out?
You know, I don't know because I wouldn't say the district condones it. We're kind of at the whim of the UHSAA.
Right.
They establish when the playoffs happen, when all these things take place. And unfortunately, that coincides with graduation in some cases. I think in most instances, the parents are supportive of their kids going to playoffs and having that experience rather than, again, sitting on the football field and waiting for their name to be read.
Now, I'm friends with those that work for the UHSAA, they do try to avoid conflicts with graduations and things like that. But when you're talking about spring sports like baseball and softball, you're at the really the mercy of Mother Nature sometimes.
Yes.
And you may have it scheduled where it doesn't conflict, but then it rains and you're 3 hours behind, and then it rains again, and then you're a day behind, and it can be, that happens.
There is a finite amount of time to get all of these contests played and in for all of the spring sports. And so they are backed up. They are trying to make that work as best they can. And on the flip side, we always try to hold our last day of school before Memorial Day weekend. And that's earlier than a lot of school districts. Some are the week of Memorial Day and some are a whole nother week after that. They just got out last week, you know. That's a challenge, but we're a little bit earlier on things, and then you have all those playoffs, and so, darn it, what do you do?
It happens, yeah.
Yeah.
Shift focus for a second. I do want to get this text.
Sure.
Let's see. Hey, can you ask about cell phone policy? Is it the same in charter schools like George Washington Academy and others? Does he know my kids go to GW?
I don't know what their actual policy will be. They will have to determine that. However, the law is pretty clear, and I'm trying to think of it. It's SB. Oh, I knew it 2 weeks ago when I wrote the letter.
Yeah, I did too, actually.
but
you actually had to compose a letter and send it to parents, telling them about
this. Yeah, I've composed the letter. It's gone through the approval process with administration, and we're about to send it to parents. So that will be coming out this week, is my anticipation. But yes, that, and so with George Washington, I truly don't know what theirs will be. They have to establish every LEA, which stands for Local Education Authority, LEA, according to the law, has to create their own policy that complies with state law.
So the law does apply to charter schools, too. So
yes,
they have to comply, and then there's a little bit of wiggle room as far as policy.
But a charter school is considered its own LEA. So it's separate from Washington County School District, and so they will have to figure out how their policy is going to be enacted in their school. In most cases, it will mirror something that we've done, and so that's all I can tell you. I don't know exactly, but I would assume it's going to mirror what we're doing.
Now, I have a question for you. Let's go to private schools.
Sure.
Does this law, I guess the law would apply to them too, right? A law is a law, right?
I believe a law is a law, and they would be considered, even though they're private, a local education authority. It doesn't say local public education authority,
right,
just local education authority. So there would have to be compliance on all sides.
All right. Well, that's...
I
think you're right.
I mean, play an attorney on TV.
Well, if they make it a law... You know, yeah, and it's not just a district policy, but this is actual law. I think everybody's got to comply unless, I don't know, homeschooling, I guess.
You know, if our mutual friend Terry Hutchinson is listening.
Where is Terry?
He could give us some heads up on that, but I believe that does apply.
Yeah. All right. We're running short on time. I did have a quick question.
Please.
So I was talking a little bit with my daughter who is in college right now. Both my daughters are in college. One is flourishing. The other one is struggling a little bit with some of the college courses. And I'm wondering, how much do you feel like is on the shoulder of the school district to prepare kids for that next level of education? You get them through. I mean, is the goal to get them through high school, or is the goal to get them through high school so they're ready for college?
Well, that's the whole reason we opened our career in technical high school, is to prepare them for beyond. And so we feel like we're doing that in our K through 12, our traditional schools. But every child's going to find a different challenge as they hit higher education.
Yeah.
A lot of kids in our schools are hands-on learners, and we provide a lot of hands-on learning. Well, suddenly you go to college, and it's lectures.
Yeah,
and you have to adapt.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I don't know if it would be better that if you were a good online learner, if you could adapt better to the lectures in higher ed or not. I don't know. I know my kids have struggled with that as well. Some have done great in those lecture settings. I have one that has not done great, and that's okay. They recognize that they're a hands-on learner, and that's what works for them. And then you may want to consider something like, you know, there's nothing wrong with the Dixie Technical College, where you get the hands-on learning in specific career fields and what you want to do.
I have a daughter at SUU right now. She loves the online stuff. She loves the recorded stuff.
Yep.
She said one of the great things is if you miss something, you click your mouse and you rewind it and you have them say it again and then you didn't miss it. And
that's a treat.
She's
like,
it is so nice to have. And she said, when I go to a live lecture and I miss something, I know it's gone forever unless I ask a neighbor or I go down and talk to the professor afterward. And so
it does take some adaption, and we can't create an atmosphere where we're perfectly mimicking higher ed, because it's just not conducive for what we're teaching. And so, but we're trying our best where we can, you know, but it does take adaption as kids grow up. They're going to hit higher ed, and it's a whole different scenario for them. And we recognize that'll be a challenge.
Is there any online learning right now in Washington County School District? Are there classes kids can take that they don't have to be present?
Our schools offer some of those, as well as the Utah Online High School or online school. That is K through 12, and that is sponsored by the Washington County School District. And so kids can take online classes right now and sign up for those, and they can boogie through their courses. If that's where their strength is, boy, yeah, sign up for it and get those things taken care of.
And they can have their cell phone with them if they really have to.
Well, if they're learning at home, we can't control that.
That's
so.
Right. All right, Steve. Well, congratulations again on the foundation and the fact that
you've been able to.
Did you say $360,000?
$390,000.
Incredible amount of money.
I know, it's so cool.
And that's not tax money. That's not, you know, from the feds or anything. This is from people who have stepped up and volunteered and
given
money.
The generosity of our community.
Amazing.
And it's both businesses and private individuals. We have some families that'll bring us $50,000, $25,000.
Wow.
It's big chunks of money that are coming in to help our teachers. And so my message out there to our teachers is, hey, you're supported and you're loved. And our message to our kids is we're doing the best darn job we can to help get them the learning they need.
I love it.
The learning they need. How's that for a sentence? The music made me panic.
Yeah, sorry about that. We are out of time. Steve, thanks again for coming.
Thanks, Andy.
Great to talk to you. We'll see you next month. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back online and try to do better tomorrow. Always. We'll see you then.